Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Space Talks, a science-based show with a particular interest in all things space. This is Stephen Lowry along with co-host Tim Woods on Vancouver Island. And hello, Tim, how are things today?
Super, they're super good out here on Vancouver Island. How about yourself?
Not bad at all, thank you. And Tim, before we start, I have a couple of postscripts here. And the first is with regard to the recent Chinese spy balloon, which was brought down in February. Now, interestingly, 10 years earlier in 2013, India's army was tracking a Chinese spy drone, and indeed there were several of them, violating India's airspace over a period of 6 months, only to eventually realize that they were actually tracking and watching the planets Jupiter and Mars. And another postscript I have is from a recent episode, which has got to do with the launching of Sputnik in October 1957, and that's something we mentioned in episode 1. Well, in October, that Russian satellite was such a shocking event that at least one theater manager stopped the movie in progress to announce the news. The name of that interrupted movie was Earth versus the Flying Saucers, and in the audience was a 10-year-old Stephen King.
Today's topic is space movies. We're going to explore some of the early history, the key movies, our favorite movies, and one of the unique facets of so many movies of this genre, time travel. Now, it's a broad topic, hard to know how to parse it for just one episode of Space Talks, but we needed to rule out lots of great movies that just didn't seem to fit for a lot of reasons. There have been great documentaries. There's been movies like the Dune series or the Planet of the Apes. But Steve and I decided to focus on movies that made us think about space travel and what's out there. For the most part, a lot of the great movies have actually drawn on the familiar terrestrial plot lines.
And speaking of those plot lines, Tim, I'm sure you're aware that Christopher Booker's 2014 book entitled Seven Basic Plots argued that one could distill just about every movie plot into one of seven different themes. And three of those seven are particularly useful for space science fiction movies. So the point has to be made that just because Hollywood started making space-themed movies didn't mean that they abandoned tried-and-true plot lines, which were familiar to viewers of all ages. So let's begin with that first theme that he mentioned, and that is overcoming the monsters. And in that category are normal classic movies such as Jaws, Frankenstein, and Dracula. But in the early 1950s, science fiction movies were replete with monster movies, such as 1958's The Blob, 1954's Them, a film about atomic-modified ants. And Tim, it's here I'm going to insert a classic clip from TV's The Simpsons, which I'd like to think was heavily influenced by the movie Them. You're about to hear TV reporter Kent Brockman announce live that Homer's spacecraft has been invaded by apparently gigantic malevolent ants. Let's have a listen.
From inside the spacecraft with average not Homer Simpson. And we'd like to... Ladies and gentlemen, we've just lost the picture, but what we've seen speaks for itself. The Corvair spacecraft has apparently been taken over, conquered, if you will, by a master race of giant space ants. It's difficult to tell from this vantage point whether they will consume the captive Earthmen or merely enslave them. One thing is for certain, there is no stopping them. The ants will soon be here. And I, for one, welcome our new insect overlords. I'd like to remind them that as a trusted TV personality, I can be helpful in rounding up others to toil in their underground sugar caves.
Well, wasn't that delicious? You know, another science fiction monster movie from 1957 was The Deadly Mantis, another film which I enjoyed as a kid. And then, of course, there's the classic Godzilla, likewise mutated by nuclear radiation gone amok. And that was a topic in the media forefront at the time because of above-ground atomic bomb testing and the ever-present threat of nuclear war.
Well, here's another great example of that sort of overcoming a monster category. And in fact, it was an old cowboy movie, High Noon. That one starred Gary Cooper, who was forced to stand alone against a gang of deadly killers. That was made in 1952. Then, some 30 years later, came the movie starring that era's leading man, Sean Connery, called Outland. And there we find Connery playing the part of a marshal just arrived on Io, Jupiter's moon. His job being to keep law and order. But then he finds himself preparing to stand alone against a gang of deadly killers.
And so the next genre of science fiction movies centers about the theme of a quest, or a search for a specific goal or an achievement in mind. And whereas terrestrial movies such as Raiders of the Lost Ark fit into this genre, in terms of science fiction movie, Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey tops the bill, but there are supporting role movies with the likes of Interstellar and Star Trek. Now, a third category that Booker classified is that of voyage and return. And as the name suggests, classics such as Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Gulliver's Travel fit into this category. And the stellar cousins such as the 1950s Destination Moon, 1995's Apollo 13, and 2015's Martian nicely fit the bill of voyage and return. And just before we go on, perhaps we can squeeze in a final tip of the hat, so to speak, in the direction of a fourth genre, and that being comedy. And back in the day, junior audiences were amused with the likes of 1953's Abbott and Costello Go to Mars, 1962's The Three Stooges in Orbit, and 1967's Don Knotts in The Reluctant Astronaut.
So one way to parse all the sci-fi space movies could be to put them into those seven basic plot buckets. But there are other ways to go at our challenge today. We can look at the evolution of the genre, starting with some of the first ones that actually date back a very long time.
And so the first one we'd like to mention today dates back to 1902, and it's a little 18-minute gem called Le Lune Voyage dans la Lune, or in English, Voyage to the Moon, inspired by a number of sources, including Jules Verne's novel, From the Earth to the Moon. This silent movie is considered to be the oldest sci-fi movie made. It can be viewed on YouTube. And as a spoiler alert component, I'll simply mention that it becomes very much so an us against them film.
That's scary stuff, Steve. And scary is a bit of a theme for those early movies. They featured a lot of fear and superheroes. In fact, a couple of the most famous serials, as they were then known, were just popular comic strips that had been converted to movies. Think Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers, both getting their launch on the screen in the late 1930s. Now, Flash Gordon's first episode was called The Planet of Peril. Sure enough, a planet called Mongo was on a collision course for Earth, and it was up to Flash Gordon to save the day. Meanwhile, for Buck Rogers fans, the screen version saw the hero, Buck Rogers, and his team go to Saturn, where they wanted to enlist the locals in a battle against the villainous Kane.
So it should be noted that a quick review of science fiction movies from the late 40s through to the 50s and 60s were generally B movies aimed at juvenile audiences and something no self-respecting adult would actually pay to view. However, I wanted to draw attention to one of the great 20th century movies that actually flipped the script a bit away from advanced aliens intent upon enslaving the Earth, and that's the 1951, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Now, despite the scary landing of an alien spacecraft just outside Washington, it would turn out the visitor, Klaatu, is from an advanced civilization that wanted to look after us Earthlings. The movie has become a classic and well-deserved. Was it influential? You bet it was. Perhaps you remember the U.S. Secretary of State, Colin Powell. He was convinced that this movie inspired Ronald Reagan to discuss the notion of banding together to fight aliens with none other than Mikhail Gorbachev in 1985. 2 years after that meeting, Reagan told a UN audience, and I'm going to quote, "I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world," end quote. Now, the 60s were a bit of a dark zone for space movies, though it did, of course, bring us Star Trek. And there's a whole episode's worth of discussion we can have about that TV franchise. But the 60s did finally bring us adult science fiction movies, including the all-time great 2001 A Space Odyssey. And we're going to talk about that later.
So the advent of adult science fiction movies featured more altruistic aliens, as in 1977's Close Encounters of the Third Kind and 1988's Alien Nation and Contact in 1997 and the latest Arrival in 2016. And yet, these uplifting films were balanced by absolutely horrific life forms as depicted in 1971's The Andromeda Strain, John Carpenter's 1987 The Thing, which was a remake of the original, and of course, the fantastic 1979 Alien. And now, with increased advancements in computers and robotics, adult audiences are increasingly treated to gems such as iRobot, released in 2004, and the 2009 movie entitled Moon, the foreboding 2014 movie Ex Machina, and the equally chilling 2019 I Am Mother, all which featured artificial nascents, or the ability of machines to acquire human-level emotions with the same needs and desires.
Those were pretty sophisticated ones, but let's not forget Lorne Greene getting away from his ranch, Bonanza, and finding himself starring in Battlestar Galactica. Or David Bowie stepping away from a rock and roll tour to star in the movie The Man Who Fell from Earth. So you can see that the Cold War themes had given way to a much broader brand of plots. When you think of all the space movies made, it's hard not to acknowledge that a great many were driven by one unique aspect, and that would be time travel.
Ah, yes, time travel. But before we jump into time and science fiction, as in the movies, let's take a quick look at science fact and time dilation. So Einstein determined that time can be altered by two different forces, one being speed and the other being gravity, and we're referring to those in their extremes. He wrote his famous 1905 paper on the theory of special relativity, and I hasten here to correct any misconception that listeners may have about the word theory. In common practice, a theory is rather speculative. It's a guess. In science, a theory is evidence-based, following a set of exhaustive researches and observations, and it can be tested. The moment a theory fails a test, it is rejected. Einstein's theory of general relativity states that speed-time dilation does exist, which means the faster an object travels, the slower time becomes for it. With regard to gravitational time dilation, the stronger the force of gravity, the slower time becomes. Now, on Earth, we experience gravitational time dilation all the time, but it's so minute, we don't notice it, though instruments can and do. For example, if you work on the top floor of a skyscraper, while your identical twin lives in the bottom of the skyscraper, time will go by slower for him than for you. People who work on the bottom floor of a skyscraper are literally time traveling into the future compared to you or others at the top floor who lag behind at time, and that's because they're closer to the center of the Earth where there's more gravity.
Speed-time dilation was demonstrated by NASA between March 2015 and March 2016 when identical twin astronauts Scott and Mark Kelly were involved in an experiment. Scott Kelly's year-long mission orbiting the Earth made his identical twin Mark an even older brother. Scott traveled at approximately 8 kilometers per second for a whole year while his brother on Earth was relatively stationary. Traveling at that speed, Scott's time slowed by 5 milliseconds. Elder brother Mark, born 8 minutes before Scott, is now 8 minutes and 5 seconds older than him. So we know that time can be slowed, and let's have a look at how time, the fourth dimension, is not only slowed, but sped up and manipulated in movies. But now it's time to talk about favorite science fiction movies.
Let me take a guess. Your favorite, my favorite, 2001, A Space Odyssey.
That's right, Steve. And I think we should just go over why it was such a groundbreaking movie, a changing of the genre of sci-fi movies altogether. Now, Stanley Kubrick wanted to make a serious movie, one that asked the audience to think about evolution, about religion, about space travel and artificial intelligence. Spacecraft in the movie were not made to look like some kind of futuristic fighter jet, but instead orbiting hotels or a cargo container for people, fuel, and propulsion. And if you think about the astronauts in 2001, they weren't the superheroes or cowboys. They were professionals. They weren't Buck Rogers. They were Neil Armstrong. And then, of course, you've got the classic character, if you will, as a computer, HAL, which was not named after IBM, but short for Heuristic Algorithmic Computer. Now, it also, I think it's fair to say that this was the first movie that talked to the issue of artificial intelligence as not being without risk. And despite all of this, this remarkable transformation into a more realistic and mundane depiction of space travel, it was still breathtaking, captivating, and memorable. I know it was for you too, Steve.
The number of discussions that our friends had following that movie made us think about alternative endings over and over again. And reading various articles on the ending of it and the meaning of the black monolith, even to this day, make people scratch their heads and wonder.
It's an incredible movie, the impressions of which have lasted all this time. And I'd like to just note that it came out in 1968. Great timing, as it was the same year that Apollo 8 made that incredible first voyage to the moon.
Well, Tim, now let's talk about our favorite science fiction movies. Categorize them by various forms. For instance, let's start off with gadgetry, those movies which had something which really thrilled us. And I must admit, the first one for me was Forbidden Planet. And the gadget in that was Robbie the Robot. The plot line was, as some viewers may know, a takeoff of Shakespeare's The Tempest. And the plot line with Morbius and this inner id creature was a little bit beyond my 10-year-old imagination. But Robbie the Robot captured all the kids' imaginations. And we just loved the gadgetry and his vocal patterns. They certainly had a grab for me. Robbie the Robot was a very expensive artificial device to create and featured in a number of other movies in the later on, including Lost in Space, the TV series. Tim, do you have a favorite gadgetry type movie?
I do. It's the hovercraft from Back to the Future. And it ties in actually with your mention of the robots, which of course have taken center stage in a great many sci-fi movies. And not too long ago, I was thinking about what I could make as a gift for a neighbor's child when he was turning about 5, and looking through catalogs of wooden toys. And one of them had a whole bunch of robot-like looking characters. And I made one, very simple, easy to do. And I heard back from the parents saying that the boy just loved it. But ditto with the hovercraft. I've been in my workshop sometimes staring at a piece of wood and wondering what might be made of it, what its best future might be. And it's honest to goodness the truth that sometimes I'd laugh and look at a piece of wood and say, imagine building a skateboard, a hovercraft like the one in Back to the Future. What a wonderful toy or what a wonderful thing to imagine actually existing.
Yes, I can understand that entirely. Now, another genre that of some of my favorite science fiction movies is that of terror. And as a youngster, I must say, The Blob was such a terrifying movie for me. I was 10 years old and I saw the trailers for The Blob. And there's one particular scene in the trailer where the blob starts oozing out onto the audience from the projector room above. And while we're facing forward, looking at the screen, and it shows this red amorphous thing coming out to descend upon the audience, every kid in the audience looked backwards up at the projection booth to see what was going on. I never did see the movie at that point in time. I was too afraid to go and see it.
It's easy to picture that, Steve. A little frightening, too. And my counterpart would be the movie A Quiet Place. I'm not sure that it's a classic sci-fi movie, but the notion of being in a circumstance where the slightest sound could result in the scary monsters discovering your whereabouts, it even registered with me, despite the fact that I was certainly not a 10-year-old when I watched it.
Another really scary movie for me, which I've come to really quite like, is Alien, where Ripley is the female protagonist in that movie. That was an extremely scary movie for me. And another one going way, way, way back, the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That was something which was very viscerally frightening to me. And another one was a remake of John Carpenter's The Thing, which I saw with my father on a rental version on a VHS tape. And that scared the heck out of me. And I was an adult at that time. It just completely creeped me out. To this day, I really don't like a terror movie. I much prefer looking at a gadgetry movie, but I don't know about how you feel about those things, Tim.
I don't like to have really dark images rattle around inside my head. So I'm like you, Steve. Too much terror goes a long way for me. I'll say that. In fact, even a little bit of terror. Now, isn't another category you have here surprise endings? What's your favorite?
I would have to think The Andromeda Strain. And what I really, really liked about it, of course, I read the book first. When the book first came out, I couldn't put it down. I read it right through. What I really liked about it was the various premises, the fact that this microorganism was sought for on purpose, and they had various contingency plans to try to contain it and weaponize it. Of course, that kind of a thing only comes out toward the ending of the book. So that was a good one. And another surprise ending for me was, I'm almost embarrassed to say, Planet of the Apes. I did not see that ending coming. And I remember as I exited the movie theater, some guy ahead of us was saying, oh, I saw that coming from the middle of the movie. And I don't know whether I was embarrassed for myself or thought he was just creating a line of hooey to impress the person he was with.
In my case, the one that came to mind is interesting. It's one that I don't think was that popular. And in fact, about the only thing I can really remember about the movie vividly is the ending, which I suppose underscores the fact that it had a great one. The movie was called The Quiet Earth. I'm not alone. Neil deGrasse Tyson has called it one of his favorite sci-fi movies, too. So as I said, I can't really reprise the plot line, but our hero ends up in the final scene walking down to a beach and looks up to see Saturn rising in the sky. And the image of Saturn in place of the sun just knocked me back in my seat. It was wonderful.
Another surprise ending to me was the movie District 9. I enjoyed it as a science fiction movie. And then while I was talking about it with someone else, they said, you do know it's an allegory for South Africa and apartheid. And I felt so embarrassed that I hadn't made that extension. And I thought, oh, no, how did I miss that?
Well, it's a movie that delves pretty deeply into ethics. And I know that both of us have talked about that being one of our favorite movies, as it, in fact, coming to the topic of ethics. And the other movie in that category for me would be Moon, the movie about clones being tricked into working on the moon, raised all kinds of interesting ethical questions, as a lot of science fiction movies actually do.
Yes, Tim, in that particular movie, The Moon, the clone doesn't realize that he is a clone until right near the end, and then he has to make an ethical decision as to what to do about his clone. It truly is one of those movies I'm going to go back and revisit.
How about dystopian movies? You said District 9 would fall into that category. Do you have others?
I have three that really top the bill for me, one being THX 1138. I have seen that movie over and over again, and sometimes when I watch it, I'll have the captions on to miss because I'm missing bits of dialogue which are hidden in the back, which actually add a little bit here and there. Another good one that I like watching many times over is Logan's Run, and that's the concept of you only live until a certain age and then you're replaced. And a really creepy one for me is Minority Report. And I really like the idea of being able to cut off trouble in its path by having sensory awareness of what is about to happen.
The dystopian movies, there's so many of them now, almost a sort of a veritable flood of them. It's become such a trope. It's kind of different, though, in terms of our reaction to them versus our reaction to terror. I have a greater appetite for dystopian movies, despite the fact that they can be quite terrorizing. I think I picked Blade Runner in this category. It was because of Harrison Ford's incredible performance.
Yes, and I'm sure you've seen the remake of Blade Runner, and it's an interesting one as well. And earlier, we both alluded to comedy. And you mentioned Galaxy Quest was a favorite of yours. It is of mine as well. And I also really like Men in Black.
Two great movies. And on Galaxy Quest, I went back to have a look at who the crew had been, the stars of that. And what a group. Tim Allen, Alan Ricker, Sigourney Weaver, Tony Shalhoub, Sam Rockwell. How they managed to bring together so many A-listers for that movie is just wonderful.
It's a great movie, and it's got good cinematography, nice color. It's just a great movie. I really, really like it.
Steve, that's all the time we have today on Space Talks, and we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did conducting the research. Tune into our next episode, which will feature space capsules. And until then, this is Tim Woods.
And Stephen Lowry saying, perhaps we might wish to take a cue from the ending of a classic science fiction movie before we see you again. And this clip is from The Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Warning. Every one of you listening to my voice, tell the world, tell this to everybody wherever they are. Watch the skies everywhere. Keep looking. Keep watching the skies.